Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. When did sanctuary become a bad word? All across America, from Virginia to California and, well, Arizona, everywhere in between, Texas, Republicans are condemning what they call sanctuary cities. Cities that actually welcome immigrants to their shores. You know, I guess they're going to have to take the Statue of Liberty down. I thought America was a sanctuary country. What does sanctuary mean? Well, sanctuary, of course, means protecting people from, in a safe place, from forces that oppress them, right? It could be religious persecution. It could be economic persecution. But Americans... people from all over the world have come to America and become Americans as refugees since, well, the pilgrims in 1620 who wanted to practice their particular religion in freedom on our shores. That's kind of who we are. I think it's part of our identity. I've long argued that the only Americans that have any right to complain about immigrants are Native Americans, and, well, they may have a good case. But for the rest of us, the 98% of us that came on immigrant ships or slave ships, we are glad to be here. And our forebears, our ancestors, often did not arrive here with much. I know that my own great-grandfather, who was the last, actually, of my great-grandparents to arrive to America, came here in 1906, 112 years ago. I have looked at the Ellis Island Manifest, and I know that my great-grandfather came here with a total net worth of $20. That wasn't his income. That wasn't his daily wage. That was his total net worth. That was all the wealth he had was $20. I know that because the Ellis Island Manifest from 1906 says that if you had 50 or more dollars, you just got to put a check mark there. But if you had less than $50, they put how much you had and who would take care of you lest you become a public charge. And my great-grandfather apparently had relatives in the South, in New Orleans, in Mississippi as well. And he put down their names. They would take care of him. My great-grandfather began in, went from Ellis Island down to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, he would sell women's clothing door to door. He would sew it together. He would knock on people's doors, door-to-door salesman. We don't like those too much anymore, do we? And he would sell women's dresses. And apparently he made them pretty good because he soon earned enough to put away money to buy a small store. My grandfather took over his father's stores and grew it to about six or seven. Actually, in Louisiana, Mississippi, later in Nashville, Tennessee, where he moved and brought my mother at the age of seven. My family story is not that interesting. It's actually extremely typical. I think if you scratch virtually any American, you will find a story of the immigrant experience. If it's an African American, it might well be the slave experience, though, of course, most African Americans in the United States have a mixture of blood from all over the globe. But it's actually a pretty common story. My great-grandfather's sister came to America when she was 13. She didn't speak English. She only spoke Yiddish. They put her in a first-grade classroom. She was embarrassed to be in a first-grade classroom. After all, she was 13 years old, and she was with kids that were six. So she didn't stay in school very long. But you know what? I knew her before she died. She lived here. She had family here. And I think my family's done okay in America. I think most of us have. So why do we suddenly hate immigrants? And when I say hating immigrants, I'm not just talking about the undocumented, though I promise you I will get to the undocumented. Many of them, I think, are the most sympathetic people that we have here. But even just legal immigrants. When did the Republican Party become the party that wanted to tear down the Statue of Liberty? You may even remember one of Donald Trump's cronies. I think it was that Miller. Forgot his first name. Stephens. That's Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller.
Who said early on that it was sort of attacking the whole idea of America as a refuge for immigrants. And recently, there was a caravan that apparently comes every single year to the United States of people who are seeking asylum here. Not people sneaking across our border, not people scaling the barriers that exist, but people actually seeking asylum under United States law, under international law, which protects the right of people who are escaping religious or economic persecution. If you're going to be killed if you stay home, our laws say you have a right to stay here. That caravan was largely turned away at the border. And the message from the Trump administration is clear. We will not be a sanctuary. We hate sanctuary cities. We'll talk about those, too, this hour. It's kind of a misnomer, but we'll get to that. But first, I just want to deal with the philosophical question. Is America, the United States of America, a homeland for immigrants? Is there any other country in the world that's as much a creation of, by, and for immigrants as the United States of America? Is there another country in the world whose creed is, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free? Is this not who we are and what we're all about? Are not the people who want to stop immigrants anti-American because in essence they oppose who we are and who we've been for centuries? When did sanctuary become a bad word? As a Jewish American, I've always been very proud to be an American. But I've also known, partly, that that's because in the back of my mind, if I were not here, or my grandparents were not here, they would have been murdered for being Jewish. That's just a simple fact. I exist because I live in a sanctuary country. That's why I exist. That's why people all over the globe exist. And I would argue we get some of our best in America, precisely because people who are fleeing violence, fleeing persecution, fleeing economic deprivation, fleeing gangs and war and persecution are determined to make it here. They know how bad their other country was. And so they come here more ready perhaps than other immigrants around the globe, ready to make themselves part of America, to be part of the American dream, to keep their old culture, but not their loyalty to their old countries. After all, their countries rejected them. Isn't that the point? Isn't that who America is? And isn't it something that this refuse from their teeming shores, the people that were thrown out of Russia and Italy and Africa and England and Ireland and Germany and Japan and China and wherever you're from, that we have made the greatest economy on the planet? I would argue it's precisely because of the diversity of all our walks of life. And yes, of course, including the Mexican immigrants who've contributed so much, and Central American immigrants. Immigrants from all over the globe have contributed so much to our culture, to our music, to our restaurants. Isn't it that what makes America great? And now we have a president who intends to separate families, to separate parents from their children, brothers and sisters one from another, as a way to punish people for escaping persecution and trying to come to live the American dream. When I think of separation of families, my mind goes to really dark places. I can only think of two examples of forced separation of families. I can only think of two. They're both very dark visions. One, of course, is slavery in slavery times, white people separated the slaves, separated parent from child, separated brother from sister, separated husband from wife. The other separation, of course, that I think of, and it has to come to my mind, of course, is the Holocaust, where men and women were separate, where fathers and mothers were separated from their children, usually because one of that group was going to be sent to their deaths. This is the America that Trumpists want? This is the America they want to tear down the Statue of Liberty and bring us to the dark days of slavery or the Holocaust? The Republicans claim to be a party of family values. When did separating families become a family value? Where is this idea, and you're not going to find it in Christianity, this idea that some people are better than others? You can find it in Nazi ideology. You can find it in the hierarchy of racism. But this idea that your family isn't worth it, your kids don't matter, perhaps nowhere was that more profoundly said in a horrible way than by John Kelly, the president's chief of staff. John Kelly, a man who mocked children fleeing persecution, didn't seem to mind them separate from their families, mocked the immigrants that come here, and yet in his own family, in his own history, his great-grandparents weren't that different from my great-grandparents. They were poor, huddled masses. In fact, hey, my great-grandfather, at least, he spoke Yiddish and English. It appears that one of John Kelly's ancestors was illiterate. Maybe we need to deport people like John Kelly. We're going to get to what he said and the story of his own family right after the break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Please join us.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. The voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. When did sanctuary become a bad thing? There's an old movie. It's probably too old for most of you. It's one of my favorites as a kid. Very scary movie called Logan's Run. It's a movie where I think they killed everyone when they got to the age of 30 in this science fiction movie. I remember thinking at the time, that's a long time away, 30. But now as I approach 30, okay, we can send the laugh track aside. Anyway, but they were seeking sanctuary. That was sort of the whole thing. They were seeking to escape this oppressive regime, to find sanctuary, to find a safe spot away from the oppressors. The church, for a long time, could be used as sanctuary. The idea was if someone was out to kill you, you could walk into a church and you were safe. What's wrong with being safe? Now, I know the argument. Some of you even posted it on my Facebook page. Well, Mark, we just want them to be legal. Really? Because I don't recall the Pilgrims having any papers. I don't recall anyone having permission from the Native Americans to come to our shores. In fact, I don't recall any particular immigration law at all in the United States of America in the 1600s, 1700s, or 1800s. They really started to come around after my great-grandparents came. Really around World War I is when we start seeing significant immigration restrictions. So, why do we think that the Mexican immigrants, the Central American immigrants in this country, and I got to be clear here, half of the undocumented people in America do not cross the southern border. Do people even know that? Only about half do. The other half are mostly people who overstay their visas. people who arrive here by plane. A few come here from Canada, but many, many arrive here from plane and planes and just stay here. So, Donald, I'm not sure how your walls are going to stop airplanes. Unless you want to shut down all commerce in the United States and all tourism. But my point is this. Even the Mexicans, the ones that people love to hate, right? Why? Every undocumented immigrant I've ever met is hardworking, usually harder working than the citizens I know, and tend to work long hours for little pay with little complaint. And here's the thing. You don't just have to take my anecdotal word for it, although I suspect most of you listening to me have had the same experience. You can look at documented facts. Look at the statistics. The statistics show that undocumented immigrants and regular immigrants both commit crimes at a lesser rate than we natural-born citizens. Maybe they should stay and we should leave. But if your fear is about crime, well, the undocumented are much more peaceful than regular citizens. So what's all the fear about? And can we separate the fear from racism? I don't think we can. Recently, I was on Fox News, on the Laura Ingraham Show, actually, with Corey Stewart. Virginians know Corey Stewart. He is an executive of a nearby county, Prince William County, and he's made his whole career off attacking immigrants. As Prince William, ironically, becomes more and more and more Latino, he gets more and more and more upset, and of course, he gets less and less and less support. But this is a guy who's made his whole career out of attacking Latinos, attacking undocumented immigrants, even attacking legal immigrants. And on Laura Ingraham's show, we discussed what they call sanctuary cities. What the heck is a sanctuary city? Well, there's a couple definitions for it, and they're really very different. It's usually this is something they say to try to rile the right wing up. But if a sanctuary city means a city that does not comply with federal immigration law, then guess what, folks? There are zero sanctuary cities in the United States of America. There are none in Virginia. There are none in California. Federal law, sorry to use this word, but federal law trumps state law. It's all in the Constitution. It's in the Supremacy Clause of Article 6. Local and state governments are not allowed to supersede the federal government. Federal immigration law applies. So the extent that people believe that there's some kind of lawlessness in cities or states, they're simply wrong. It doesn't exist. Sanctuary cities has another definition. It's very interesting how they mix up the two definitions. Sanctuary cities can mean that cities will not go out of their way to punish people for being undocumented. They will not enforce immigration laws they are not required to enforce. Much like a priest in a church is not required to be a police officer, I don't believe a teacher or even a local police officer is in charge of policing federal immigration laws. It's this distinction between two different definitions of sanctuary city that allows the right wing to promote this racist agenda. I'll explain more when we come back. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after. Talking about sanctuary cities, because, well, everybody's talking about sanctuary cities. The right wing has created this term, sanctuary cities. God knows it's all over Fox News. Fox News, they're having sanctuary cities. Run! They're coming from the border! Caravans of a few hundred women and children escaping persecution. Ah! God knows people escaping persecution have never come to the United States before. Okay, well, that's not true. That's kind of who we are. And, of course, they're actually coming legally because they're seeking asylum. So what is a sanctuary city? What does it even mean? We had a bill in the House of Delegates in Virginia, Republican bill. It's a very, very short bill. It banned sanctuary cities. What does that mean? You can't really pass a law if you don't know what it means. I've asked Republicans, what does it mean? And they don't agree. I've narrowed it down to two definitions. One that doesn't exist and is used to scare Republicans, and one that does exist and is perfectly fine. Because here's the deal. If it is illegal to help undocumented immigrants under federal law, then it can't be done. States and cities have no power to override the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, which says that Congress has plenary authority over immigration. They must obey federal immigration law. So if state and a city is not obeying federal immigration law, it's not a sanctuary city because that doesn't exist. That exists only as a hypothetical because anyone that does that can be put in prison or whatever. If somebody is, you know, blocking an ICE agent with a gun and defending that immigrant, yeah, they can put them in jail. So those things don't exist. They don't exist in Virginia. They don't exist in California. They do not exist. But there's another idea for sanctuary cities. And it's that every single city and local official should be out there enforcing immigration law. I'm an elected Virginia state delegate. I guess I'm supposed to wander the streets looking for an undocumented immigrant, and if I find someone and I ask them to show their papers and they don't have it, then I turn them over to ICE where they're immediately deported. It's not just that I wouldn't do that because I find it morally offensive, but you know what? It's not my job to do that. They're asking teachers in schools, first grade classroom. A kid comes in, they want to learn English. Check their papers. Do they look brown? Do they look Latino? Do they have an accent? Let's check their papers and then call up the deportation officials. That's not in the teacher's job description. Teachers are not ICE agents. They're not immigration officials. It's not their job. And we don't want it to be their job. And I'll get to that in a second. And most importantly, it is not the job of local police to enforce federal immigration law. In fact, under federal immigration law, they are not allowed to enforce federal immigration law. If you don't like that, well, then you have to toughen it. I'm fine with it, of course. But why are they complaining about localities? The policeman's job, the policewoman's job, the police officer's job is to enforce local law, enforce the laws of where I live, the Commonwealth of Virginia. And do you know the worst way to enforce those laws? It would be to add immigration to the things you have to do for a very simple reason. Let's say you're helping a victim of crime. And let's say this is a victim of sexual assault or a victim of gang violence put forward by those few undocumented immigrants that are in gangs that actually do cause violence. They do exist. If the immigrant who's a victim will not speak to the police, then the immigrant who is a criminal gets away. The best way to help the MS-13 and gangs throughout the United States would be to enforce federal immigration law against innocent victims who are trying to speak out. Studies show that since Donald Trump became president, that reported sexual assaults in California went down some 75% in Latino areas. Do I think that suddenly people stopped committing sexual assault? I do not. I think people stopped reporting it. When people don't report it, crime increases. This is the argument I made to Laura Ingraham on her show, and she couldn't fathom it. Now, she's not a dumb person. It somehow blew her mind that these bills that would require localities to all suddenly become ICE agents actually increase crime, increase gang violence, increase immigrants committing crimes, the few that do, rather than helping the 99% that don't. So what is a sanctuary city? To the extent it conflicts with federal law, it doesn't exist. To the extent that conservatives are trying to get localities to do federal immigration law, they can't do that either. The Constitution says Congress has plenary authority. They'll have to get it through Congress. But it's a really bad idea to make people scared to live in their communities. It's bad not only because it increases crime. It's bad because it's against the very idea of who we are as Americans. In Arizona, when they passed an anti-sanctuary city law, SB 1070, the United States Supreme Court struck most of it down. The law allowed people to stop people for being Latino. And there are plenty of Latino American citizens. You look brown, you have an accent. Where are your papers? You know what? Carrying with me today, I got my driver's license. I do have that. And we do want, obviously, everyone to drive because we don't want to be hit by people who don't have driver's licenses. But I don't have my birth certificate with me. I don't carry it with me. I don't have my passport with me. I got that at home. I'm somewhat brown. I guess I don't have a Latino accent. But is this anything but pure racism? Are they going to stop the Irish immigrant or the English immigrant or the Italian immigrant? What are sanctuary cities? To the extent that they exist, they are merely people following the law. Either that or they're an intent to promote racism in this country. And when did this country no longer become a country of sanctuary? This is Mark Levine. When we come back, I'm going to play John Kelly's disgusting words, and we'll talk about them. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Talking about sanctuary cities, which is this Republican idea that localities are somehow, I don't know, disobeying immigration law? That can't be true. If it is true, there's ways through judicial process to force cities and states to obey federal immigration law, supremacy clause. But just because they have to obey it does not mean they have to enforce it. It's the same thing when people want teachers to somehow be police officers and carry guns in the schools. I don't want my algebra teacher to be chosen because of her proficiency with a gun. I want her chosen because she's good at teaching algebra. I don't want my priest to be chosen. I don't have a priest, but if I had a priest, I don't want priests to be chosen because they are ready to turn in immigrants at a drop of a hat. Priests should be chosen because of their pastoral care, because they're good at their religion, because they're good at treating people kindly. Shop owners, it's not their job to enforce immigration law. It's also not the job of local police and local sheriffs to enforce immigration law. Now, there are some localities where local police and sheriffs have tried to become immigration agents and signed agreements to cooperate with them. But to the extent that they're acting like immigration officials, that's not legal and it's not a good idea. We do not want victims of crime to be afraid of going to the police and to the sheriffs. If people feel like that if they report a crime, they're going to be deported, they're not going to report that crime, and that means the criminals won't be caught, and that means they're going to cause a lot of havoc. Murders will go up, sexual assaults will go up. If you want to stop crime, the worst way to do it is to make everyone into an immigration official. But this goes deeper. This goes deeper than this technical question about sanctuary cities. It goes to the heart of who we are as Americans and what we think of immigrants. When I see people who've come here from Mexico or El Salvador, I see my great-grandfather. I see people who have escaped violence, as my great-grandparents did. They escaped, frankly, the Cossacks, who would come into their shtetl shooting people from horses. They escaped violence to make a better life in America. I think the same is true of the people from El Salvador, from the people from Mexico. And whether you come for political persecution or economic deprivation or to save your own life, I say welcome. I say you are what makes America great. The President's Chief of Staff, John Kelly, has a different view. Let's play what John Kelly had to say recently.
Let me step back and tell you that the vast majority of the people that move illegally into the United States are not bad people. They're not criminals. They're not MS-13. But they're also not people that would easily assimilate into the United States. They're overwhelmingly rural people. In the countries they come from, fourth, fifth, sixth grade educations are kind of the norm. They're coming here for a reason, and I sympathize with the reason. But the laws are the laws.
All right, so that's John Kelly. He went on to say these people have no skills, which he's been criticized for. So he admits the vast majority are not the MS-13. Sorry, Laura Ingraham, who every time she sees an immigrant thinks gang member. But they're rural? Okay. Why don't we tell Trump supporters that rural people are all illiterate and stupid? Do you really want to tell Trump supporters that? They're illiterate. Well, we did a look into John Kelly's background. In the 1910 census, apparently Kelly's great-grandfather, Giuseppe Petalino, and his second wife, Concetta, were Kelly's great-grandparents. And according to the 1910 census, he was a wagon driver, and she was illiterate, and 10 years after her arrival in America, still could not speak English.
No!
That's your great-grandmother, John Kelly! Lock her up? Well, she's dead. Lock you up? You shouldn't be here. You're not an American. Or you're just a big hypocrite. What about on another side of your family? Well, what about his maternal grandfather? His maternal grandmother, Teresa, is listed as a child in the 1900 census. Her father, his great-grandfather, a day laborer named John DeMarco, had been here for 18 years, and he had never become a citizen. Your great-grandfather, John Kelly, was undocumented. And you know what the census also shows? John DeMarco, great-grandpa of John Kelly, could not read English, could not write English, could not even speak English. I dare say that most El Salvadorans, most Mexicans who come here and have lived here 18 years, they speak more English than your great-grandfather, John Kelly. If you're talking about illiterate, if you're talking about having no skills, your great-grandparents were a day laborer and a wagon driver. How is it that you're here, John Kelly? Would you say that your parents did not make a success? You just said these people can't integrate. Would you say that you're not integrated, John Kelly? Or your great-grandparents didn't integrate? Of course, the worst thing John Kelly said is when he was asked if it was cruel and heartless to take a mother away from her children. And here's how he responded. I want to get the exact quote here. I really tried to get you the full audio. Unfortunately, we couldn't get it. I got it right here. Here we go. The questioner says, family separation stands as a pretty tough deterrent. And John Kelly says it would be a tough deterrent. A much faster turnaround on asylum seekers. Again, think about who he's talking about. He's not talking about people who are sneaking across the border. He's talking about people who are openly walking to the border and under United States law applying for asylum because they are refugees, because they're political or religious refugees. He's talking about people coming here for the same reason the pilgrims did, or frankly, the Jews escaping the Holocaust did. And our laws, which are actually part of international law, allow people to seek asylum. So of those people, he would separate them from their children. He would take a Holocaust survivor and separate that person from their children after all they've been through. The questioner asks him, some people say it's cruel and heartless to take a mother away from her children. John Kelly responds, I wouldn't put it quite that way. The children will be taken care of, put into foster care or whatever. Whatever. They're disposable. Foster care or whatever. Instead of having the parents who love them, who risked everything to save them, who risked everything to bring them a better life in America, they can just go to foster care or whatever. John Kelly, would you do that to your great-grandparents? What's the difference between your illiterate, unskilled great-grandparents who came across the border without permission? We didn't have permission in 1910. And these folks who are coming here under U.S. law seeking asylum. Sounds to me like they have more right to be here than you. When do we become a country that doesn't believe in sanctuary, that doesn't believe in compassion, that doesn't believe in the Statue of Liberty? What are we? Is there any reason for this other than pure racism? I got Dave on the line from Humboldt County. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Oh, Mark, I'm still of the belief that our government has fallen into such bad hands. They are not people who care. They don't care about people coming into the country. They don't care about citizens who are here that can't benefit them. They are not a government.
But you know
of
what?
The
but
people,
Dave,
by the people and for the people.
Here's the point.
And I think you only touch on it just.
But
to
it's even more than that.
The sanctuary element of it.
It's not just compassion. It's not just having compassion. I don't expect them to have compassion. But when he says they don't benefit the country, he's really saying that John Kelly hasn't benefited the country, that I haven't benefited the country. It's hard sometimes for the first generation, though sometimes they do a great job. But by the time they have kids who grow up, who speak English, who are assimilated, virtually every American, unless you're a Native American, you're a descendant of immigrants. Have we not created a wonderful country here? How can they say they won't benefit America? That's exactly who America is. He's got to know that. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's a part of it. You know, I think we're about to start on another Occupy, and it might stand up to this issue as well. And that is, we're today, 4:30 right here in our own courthouse at Eureka, we're going to be, I think, having a good turnout. It may well be another Occupy of people saying, we the poor stand up to this greedy, exploitive class of folks that would ban us everywhere they could.
I'll tell you, Dave, there's an article in the Washington Post about California. I applaud what you're doing in California. I think California is properly protecting American values in the way that so much of Trump America is not. And so good for standing up for those values in Eureka. I appreciate your call. Let me just quickly get to Reggie before we sign off in Georgia.
Oh, yeah. You know who else said racist statements and comments? Tommy Lauren, who cited Hostin from the Viewbrook, that her family history, saying that most of her family spoke Norwegian, not English. They're immigrants, too.
I mean that's the story of America. The thing is, it's unsurprising. I mean, we looked up John Kelly's past. Someone actually did it on Twitter. We just copied them. But we are all that story. You may not know the story of your great-grandparents, but there's only three ways people came to America, right? One is immigrants. One is slave ships. And the third way is if you're a descendant of the Native Americans who were here thousands of years before any white or black people were here. In fact, ironically, Native Americans, most Mexicans and El Salvadoran people are of the same blood. They're mixed blood, Spanish and Native indigenous blood. They are more American than we are. They are native to the region. When will we stop classifying people based on these arbitrary distinctions? America is the land of people coming together from all over the world to make a better place. And that's the America that I will always fight for. This is Mark Levine, Southern California.